watch or watches may be needed for at least portions of the region. That from the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma. At noon Central Time, Lincoln, the National Weather Service office in Lincoln, Illinois, reported a strong storm near Edinburgh, or 8 miles north of Taylorville, moving northeast at 55 miles per hour. Nicholas-sized hail and winds around 50 miles per hour were expected with that storm, and that was reported today at noon. In the WILL severe weather coverage area at the moment, a flood warning remains in effect for Edgar County in east central Illinois until 5:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time today. A nearly stationary frontal boundary will remain draped across the Midwest over the next couple of days, providing the region with continued rain and thunderstorms. Heavy rain and flooding are of concern as many areas are saturated. 3 to 6 inches of rain will be possible along and south of a line from St. Louis to Indianapolis. Severe storms are also possible. The main threats will be hail and damaging winds across southern Missouri, southeastern Illinois, and southern Indiana. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon: cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 70. The wind will be out of the southwest from 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 35 miles per hour. Tonight there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. Showers and thunderstorms then are likely after midnight. It will be cooler with a low of 50. The wind tonight from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are likely. It will be seasonably cool with a high of 57. The wind out of the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a chance of showers early, the low 43, the wind out of the west at 15 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly cloudy and breezy with a high in the upper 50s. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. The outlook for Friday, sunny with a high in the mid 60s. At noon Central Time across Illinois, cloudy conditions reported in northern sections, some sun reported in central and southern locations. In Indiana, it was cloudy. Rockford and O'Hare reported 61 degrees. It was 60 at Bloomington, 64 at Mattoon. Carbondale reported 70 degrees. 60 degrees at South Bend, 65 at Lafayette, and Indianapolis, 63 at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported cloudy conditions at the top of the hour, 63 degrees. The dew point, 59. The relative humidity, 87%. The wind out of the south at 21 miles per hour. And the barometric pressure, 29.50 and steady. And at 1240, 65 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The U.S. Supreme Court will not fast-track a challenge to the constitutionality of the 2010 health care law. The challenge was filed by the state of Virginia and its attorney general. The case will be heard in the appeals courts instead, although it could reach the high court before next year's elections. NPR's Julie Rovner reports.
It's pretty rare for the high court to agree to take a case directly from a trial court.
The case has to be of, quote, such imperative public importance, end quote, that it requires immediate determination in this court.
Timothy Jost is a law professor at Washington and Lee University Law School in Lexington, Virginia. He says the court usually limits such expedited cases to those involving foreign relations, national security, or national crises.
And this doesn't rise to that level.
That's not how Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli sees it. He told Fox News in February that states and businesses shouldn't have to spend money to implement a law that could be struck down, since separate federal district court judges have ruled that the law is both constitutional and unconstitutional.
And so we clearly have a split and a great deal of uncertainty across the country about whether or not this law is going to be enforced in a year and a half or so, and massive costs to prepare for the law.
At issue is the section of the law that requires nearly every American to have health insurance starting in the year 2014 or else pay a tax penalty. So far, three district court judges have explicitly found that requirement an acceptable use of Congress's constitutional authority to regulate commerce. Several others have dismissed lawsuits on more technical grounds. Two judges, however, one who heard Cuccinelli's case in Virginia and another who heard a multi-state case in Florida, have ruled the mandate is unconstitutional. Most court watchers do expect the case to reach the Supreme Court when it's exhausted the appeals process. That's likely to be late this year. And one of the interesting aspects to yesterday's order, says law professor Jost, is that it was apparently decided by all the justices, including Clarence Thomas and Elena Kagan.
Which may suggest that both of them believe that they are capable of deciding this case.
Combatants on both sides of the political aisle have urged those justices to recuse themselves. Kagan, because she was Solicitor General in the Obama administration while the health law was being pursued, and Thomas, because his wife was active in groups opposing it. It looks like neither will sit this one out, however. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
One of the most photographed structures in the world is the Golden Gate Bridge.
I like it because it's orange. That's Boise State colors. Orange and blue, and it's orange, kind of.
Ish.
That's Katie Summers, who was visiting the bridge recently. The iconic bridge, with its unmistakable color, will be 75 years old next year. When the bridge was painted back in the 1930s, the color was a radical choice. More from NPR's special correspondent, Susan Stamberg.
Orange-ish is certainly more fun than the real name of the bridge's color, International Orange. Vermilion would be better, terracotta, burnt sienna, whatever you call it. It is the vivid, iconic, unmistakable color of the Golden Gate Bridge. This particular day on the bridge with spokesperson Mary Curry, we are enwrapped by a cloak that regularly visits San Francisco on little cat feet.
Here's the thing. This is a foggy, windy day. What's the point? I can't see the bridge.
Right, but when this fog goes away, you'll see the beautiful Marin Headlands and the Golden Hills as they reflect against this beautiful international orange.
Here it comes. Look at that. The fog is moving, and there's that tower. Not clear yet, but as if you had a really bright orange pastel and you smushed it a lot, there it goes again.
The color goes, comes, goes, and according to Mary Curry, was kind of an accident for which the bridge's consulting architect gets the credit.
It was Irving Morrow that saw the primer that was on some of the steel when it arrived here, reddish orange, and he had to convince the Department of War, who was the permitting agency at the time, have the longest suspension span ever built at the time to have this wild, crazy color.
Because bridges were gray, black, or silver, not orange-ish. During construction, Irving Morrow noticed how the primer grew luminous in the shifting atmosphere of San Francisco Bay. In 1935, he wrote, "The Golden Gate Bridge is one of the greatest monuments of all time. What has been thus far played up in form should not be let down in color." For paint, the primer color would need some added tones, but it was just right with the gray fog, the golden and green hills, the blue water, and, when you can see it, sky.
When I come to work every day, my heart goes like this when I see the Golden Gate Bridge.
Rocky Della Rocca has painted the Golden Gate for more than two decades. Now he oversees the bridge's 28 painters. Tough work. Only rain stops them. But there's fog almost 70% of the time. Wind can blow 60 miles an hour, and they're using spray guns.
There's some places out here where you're painting out in the wind that, you know, it's so windy that you have to hold the spray gun right next to the steel, otherwise the paint will blow off at a 90-degree angle. That's why it's be a structural steel painter or ridge painter. You got to be a little off center.
Rocky dreams in international orange.
My dream at that moment is to get out of the wind, fog, and cold. We head down to a storeroom full of buckets.
Let me guess, there's orange paint in there.
Rocky Della Rocca dabs the famous color on my finger.
You know what? Feels just like paint. But look how pretty it is on my finger.
Yeah.
This is beautiful orange. It's not an aggressive orange
no,
at
it's
all.
Very
it's subtle.
And
it's got
soft orange, yeah.
It's got browns in it or some
blue,
dark.
Blue, there's yellows.
Yeah.
You can't go to a paint store and buy the Golden Gate Bridge color for your boudoir. You may find something called International Orange, but it is not this International Orange. This one is mythic. Another myth is about applying the paint.
They start at one end and go to the other end every year and then turn around and go back? Not.
No. I always tell them you start at one end and you get the other end, you retire.
That's how long it would take?
Yeah.
More than 10 million square feet of steel get touched up continually year-round. But not on this windy, wet day. We stood on the bridge one last time, hoping the fog would clear, but no. We could see the vermilion cables curving upward, but going nowhere, disappearing through the fog. Thrilling, really.
It's the most beautiful bridge in the world.
Can you imagine if it were another color?
No. The Navy wanted to have it painted black and yellow so it was more visible, but the bridge district said no way.
No way indeed.
To me, color doesn't matter.
Well, there's always a critic. New Yorker Jerry Burkhoff is visiting Golden Gate Bridge for the first time.
Any color you want, smear it, it's great. Gray would be great.
Well, good enough for New York bridges, but not this one, which I, growing up in New York, always thought was the color of gold. The Golden Gate Bridge is named not for its hue, but for its location. It is built above the Golden Gate Strait, that legendary passage from the Pacific Ocean into the San Francisco Bay.
San Francisco, open your Golden Gate.
I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
I'm Cynthia Hoyle. I bike to work from Urbana to my office at CUMTD.
And I'm Mark Nicewonder. I bike from Mahomet to the University of Illinois.
Bike to Work Day is coming May 3rd. CUFID families and WILL invite you to join your neighbors and bike to work on Tuesday, May 3rd. For more information, visit cubiketowork.com.
Professor Ali Tarhouni abruptly left behind his picturesque campus in Seattle. The Libyan expatriate returned home to help rebels against Muammar Gaddafi.
I go out and walk for 10 minutes and you see the people and you see the faces and you realize, yeah, it's really true and it's really worth it.
An unlikely leader in an uncertain Libyan revolution. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 26th of April, 2011. It was on this day in 1607, a group of about 100 English settlers arrived at the Chesapeake Bay on three ships. They chose an inland site for their landing, and they named their town Jamestown in honor of King James I. It's the birthday of Ludwig Wittgenstein, born in Vienna, 1889. Born into a wealthy family, gave away his